Hi, you're watching Stefan Levera Podcast, a show brought to you by Swan.com. Today, we're talking about Mi Prima Bitcoin, aka my first Bitcoin. So, a couple years ago, I had John from the team on, and now he's rejoining me. The team has come so far. In fact, they have now taught this program to teach Bitcoin to students, over 25,000 students in that time since, and it is now going international. So I thought it'd be a good time to get John back on and hear some updates from him on how far they have come. So now on to my chat with John. Okay, John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about what you guys are doing. It's been a while since we last spoke on the show, but I've seen you around at a few different events here and there. It'd be good to, you know, just get a bit of an overview. What's the latest with Mi Prima Bitcoin?
Yeah, there are so many different things that I could say to answer that question. So I'll try to keep it short and give an overview. So a couple of things that I'm excited about, like right now today, is the newest version of the Bitcoin Diploma. So that's the 2024 version. That will come out in about a week. So last days of March, first days of April. And that's a big improvement over every year. We try to iterate upon it and we try to take feedback in and make it a little bit better. So we're really excited about this one, but it's not just the content that has changed. We've also redesigned the infrastructure around it. So it's always been open source. But now we've created an infrastructure, and that means file formats, that means Telegram groups, that means like documents that share best practices about translations, all of these things to facilitate the spread of that to other communities around the world. So currently the last version had been translated into 10 or 11 languages, I believe, which is amazing. And we're super happy with that. This new one, the last part was the design part. So the content was done about a month ago, and we've already sent it out to some people to begin on the translations. And there are 25 groups of people working on translating it into their local language currently, right? So that should come out like pretty soon after we release it in English and Spanish in a couple of weeks. And that's a big part of that is just the infrastructure that we've developed around it, right, to make it easier. So that's one thing, the Bitcoin Diploma. In conjunction with that, or aided by the Bitcoin Diploma, is we have a international network of nodes of Bitcoin educators around the world that share a similar ethos and philosophy, and share best practices. So that philosophy. So we try to borrow from Bitcoin itself as much as possible, right? So that's why we call it the node network and all that, and we consider Mi Prima Bitcoin El Salvador, the quote-unquote Genesis block. So we created these consensus rules. And in order to join the network, you have to agree to the consensus rules. And there's six of them. And that's that the education must be independent, impartial, community-led, Bitcoin-only, quality, and teach empowerment. So long as you do that and you're active, like you could demonstrate proof of work, then you could be in the network is actually self-governing at this point. So it's not up to us. It's up to all the nodes that are in, whether new people are allowed to join or not. And they're actually pretty strict. So right now there are 27 nodes in 21 countries. It's been active for a little bit more than a year now, but we're kind of coming out of stealth mode more recently. And the most recent round, there were four applicants that, you know, submit their proof of work, essentially. Like, yes, I agree to these consensus rules. Here's my proof of work. I'd like to join. And that was from Spain, Nepal, Tanzania, and Mexico. And the network actually rejected three of them, right? That they have pretty high standards, which I think is great. And only the one that was accepted was Mexico, which is in Isla de las Mujeres, which is a really amazing project. And I love, like, the woman who runs it, her name is Isabella, and she is great at what I'll call working in the open, right? She started like a fundraising for it. And like, as soon as she got enough money, she went out to the store, bought a bunch of materials and like made a video about it. Like, hey, this is what happened with the donation. So she's really good at working in public.
Right. I know that okay. was a so, yeah, I mean, long so, yeah, tangent. I guess, yeah. Yeah, you mentioned a lot of different locations. I think that's probably the big thing, probably for a lot of people who might have only heard my first episode with you. They might have thought it's just in El Salvador, but I guess that's probably the main thing now that it's, you know, it's going out to many different nations. And so do you want to just, I guess, refresh people on the format here? Because it's like a curriculum in terms of teaching somebody about Bitcoin. Is it designed to be taught in person? Or what's the, you know, what's the format here?
Yeah, yeah, great question. Yes, so it was designed to be taught in person. So the first use case that we had for it was to teach it in person in the public school system here in El Salvador, which is something we continue to do. One of the other changes with the version this year, with the infrastructure changes, the formatting changes, it's easier for communities to remove a paragraph, a page, whatever, and replace it with something that is more relevant to their local context. And that would include, we're also working on this year, creating a better online version. So there are some people that already teach it online, but it's not designed for that. It's designed to be in person. So we are working this year, we'll come out with an online first version of it.
I see. Yeah. And so just to give people some context, what is the normal time frame to go from start to finish of this course? Is it like a few weeks, or is it, you know, what's the normal time frame there?
So when we teach it, and kind of what we recommend is 10 weeks. So there are 10 classes. Each class is about an hour and a half long. So you could say it's 15 hours, right? And you could break that up differently. You could do it in 5 weeks if you do it twice a week. You could space it out longer if you want. But there are 10 classes, an hour and a half each, and it's basically zero to Bitcoin, right? So this is targeted at no coiners, pre-coiners, people that are curious about Bitcoin, or maybe maybe it's a course that they have to take at high school here in El Salvador, but they start with a base level of knowledge that is next to zero. So the first part of the book is financial literacy, essentially, right? It's like, what is money? Why is money? How did we arrive at this moment in time? And then the second part, so that's the first four chapters. So it's nearly half and half. So the second half goes into Bitcoin. We don't talk about Bitcoin at all in the first 4 weeks of the course. It's just laying the groundwork for, you know, why we need Bitcoin, right? One of my favorite things about the workbook is the very first day, the very first page, the teacher asks the students why Bitcoin, and there's a couple of pages that they could fill out. The very last day, the very last activity, same question, couple of blank pages. And what we've seen is that first page is almost blank, right? Like people might write a paragraph or something. And by the last day, those last pages, sometimes they staple extra pages on, right? Like 3 pages isn't enough to explain why Bitcoin.
Interesting. Yeah. So yeah, it shows how much people are learning. That's cool. And I think the other important point is it's not just like a university level course, right? These are school kids who are learning this course and who were some of the first people taught this course in El Salvador. I was having a look on the website. It looks like you're listing there. You've taught over 25,000 students in person that have gone through this course. So can you just elaborate a bit on that point? Or maybe that number's changed since now. Maybe that number's out of date.
Yeah, that number's higher. that number is higher. And the number actually gets harder to track as we grow, right? Just because there are so I guess there's two numbers that we directly teach and numbers that for example, we are working with the Ministry of Education and we are actually teaching. So they took the Bitcoin Diploma, which is open source, and that's kind of their primary source document, and they've made a couple of edits and modifications to fit their needs. But we are helping to train public school teachers that will teach it on behalf of the Ministry of Education. So far, this is something that we're doing alongside Bitcoin Beach. Last year, the pilot started. We taught 150 public school teachers. Starting next month, the next cohort is going to be 550 public school teachers, so 700 total. And we actually are teaching them our Bitcoin diploma to give them that base knowledge, right, before they go into the school system and they teach a slightly modified version that the Ministry of Education has created. So it's like, do we count all 700. I don't know, because it's kind of a crash course too. We don't do it over 10 weeks. We do it over like a week. It's a crash course that we do with them. But yeah, so the Bitcoin diploma, sorry to get back to your original question in such a roundabout way, but yeah, we probably taught 30 to 35,000 in person here in El Salvador. We teach it in the public school system. So that's 14, 15, 16, 17 year olds. But we also have open enrollment courses. So we have a house/office/school, like a multi-purpose space that we have here in the capital. We work out of community centers and municipal buildings around the country, and we have open enrollment, right? So anybody that wants to could take the course, and there's no age restriction there. And what we've seen is it was made for teenagers, but, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60, we've had students in their 80s. And it's basically 13 and up, I would say, right? Because the teenagers don't have to unlearn as much. Whereas the adults, even though you would think that maybe something that's for a 14-year-old would be too remedial for an adult, it's actually not. Like, it's kind of the same range. So,
yeah, interesting. I think it's fair to say that over time, we've had, like, the average reading age has been coming down over time, sadly, right? It's almost that, like, you know, it's sort of for that reason, it's like you need to make sure it's very simple and it's just accessible to everybody, right? We want Bitcoin to be accessible to everybody. So that's probably just an important thing to remember. But I'm sure at the same time, there are probably kids younger than 13 who've done the course also, right? So it's not it's not like you have to be 13 to be able to do the course. I also would be curious in terms of how has it gone trying to localize the course for different countries, different languages? Are there actually differences in how it's taught?
Yeah, there are differences in how it's taught. And I think that's one of the benefits of the node network, right? So, like, we share best practices. So, for example, we teach a certain way. We, as I said, we do it once a week for 10 weeks. Other people have experimented crunching it into a 2-week course, right? Doing like every day, Monday through Friday for 2 straight weeks, right? To get those 10 days, or to do class one and to do 2 classes at a time to make it like a longer session and do two classes at a time. There have been people, we're kind of in the early stages of experimenting with how we offer the course. So we generally do it for free. We're starting to experiment with this as well. But like one idea that people are experimenting with is to ask for a payment in dollars at the start of the course, say like $30, right? And then when they graduate, if they go to all the classes and they finish, then they get $30 in Bitcoin at the end. So something like that, you know, just so it's too easy to sign up to a free class and then not come, right? So to avoid that. So it's there are people that are teaching it different. And another thing would be stablecoins. So stablecoins are not relevant here in El Salvador because it's dollarized. But in a place like Argentina, then where stablecoins are part of the conversation. So we don't talk about stablecoins in the book that we produce, because it's not relevant. Like there's no reason to in this local context. But other people have found it useful to talk about it depending on their local context. So there's things like that, like, and that's besides changing examples. So for example, in Kenya, I know that they talk about M-Pesa, right? Which isn't relevant in other places. So that's kind of contextual there. So for the most part, it's the same, but it's interesting to see how people are tweaking it in different ways. And then the idea is with enough time that is all shared with the whole network. And it's like, hey, you know, this, it worked really well to charge upfront and give them the money back at the end. And maybe other people start to do that. Or there's a lot of experimentation and we're kind of at the early stages of seeing, you know, if that could be applied in other places. We're kind of still in the experimentation phase.
Yeah. And so I presume then it's like you have a base curriculum and each, you know, as you said, there's a new one coming out for this year. That just means each year, each different location has to then localize, right? They have to kind of look at, okay, what's changed from this year to last year and update on their side. Okay, this is kind of our new, this is what we're going with now. And this is the new localization we have to do, or the new language, the new translations that we have to do to kind of keep it up to date.
Yeah, and we try to make it what I'll call like a soft fork, right, rather than a hard fork. So from one version to the next, if you've taught the 2023 version, then it shouldn't be that big of a learning curve to teach the 2024 version. So a lot of the upgrades that we made actually aren't necessarily with the content. It's just like the infrastructure around it, making it easier for people. And there's, you know, but there's always room for improvement, right? Like we could always do better. That's the idea. Perfection doesn't exist, but it's important that we always trend in the right direction towards improving this every year.
Gotcha. And as part of the course material, do you end up referring out to other things where people would learn more, like go and read this book or whatever other materials out there? Or is it sort of seen like, okay, this course should just be like, it should just be enough to sort of get you started and that's it?
Yeah. So I want to say yes to both those options. Yes, we do have at the end, like further reading, right? And it just lists a bunch of books. And throughout the book, there's, you know, within each chapter, there's QR codes that lead to further reading lists where people could dive deeper if they want to. I think that Bitcoin is the best teacher, and the hardest thing to do is to get off of zero, right? So that's what we're focused on, getting people off of zero. And then I think people are capable of continuing on their own. One of the most important things that we try to teach to our students isn't necessarily Bitcoin education, but it is the ability to think for yourself, the ability to like have agency in your own intellectual journey. So that said, this is something, there are courses like here in El Salvador, there's Google Plus, which is more advanced, more technical. So we kind of see ourselves as the top of funnel, and it could go down to more advanced classes afterwards. This year we're working on creating a number of other courses that are a bit more specific, not this general, just from zero to one with Bitcoin, but, you know, about mining, about for targeting younger audiences. Again, the online version, just a variety of different branches off of that. I think this will always be our main, this will be the trunk of everything that we do, is that zero to one. We'll develop some stuff, some branches off of that, and we'll also refer people to other great programs that can take people from one to infinity, right? Because there's...
Back to the show in a moment. CoinKite.com is the leading provider of Bitcoin security hardware. I use their devices regularly, and notably they've got the Cold Card and other devices such as the Tap Signer, which you can use there. And of course, they've got the new Q device. I've got those in the mail. I'm looking forward to using the new Q device. But really, with Bitcoin security, it's important to use hardware devices to keep our keys offline. So instead of keeping them on online connected devices, you've got to keep them offline and use specialized devices to interact and sign those Bitcoin transactions, which is what you do when you are sending Bitcoin. And so the Cold Card has so many features. It has multiple secure elements. You can use it in all kinds of configurations, whether that's single signature or multi-signature if you're advanced, or maybe if you want to use it with a passphrase. There's all kinds of features there. I like using the Cold Card, and I use it as part of multiple setups that I have, some in multi-signature and so on. So if you want to get your devices, go to CoinKite.com and order your Cold Cards with the code Livera for a discount there. The lead sponsor of this show is Swan Bitcoin. Over at swan.com, you can buy Bitcoin and you can learn about Bitcoin. You can use ACH or wire transfer to send your dirty fiat into Swan, and then you can either do a smash buy and purchase a lump sum or set up an ongoing recurring purchase plan. So this is a great way to regularly accumulate sats and not really worry so much about the volatility, whether the price is up, down, left, right, who cares, just regularly accumulate. And of course, with Swan, we want you to withdraw your coins into your own self-custody, free automated withdrawals. So make sure you use that feature to withdraw the sats into your own self-custody once you've hit the thresholds that make sense for you to do that. And with Swan, remember, the team is trying to create millions of intransigent Bitcoiners. And this is the way to win the race before we have to fight the war. So if you want to sign up and learn about Bitcoin, go to swan.com and you can find out more over there. There's a range of different services, whether you're a retail individual, a high net worth, a corporate, a business, you can find more over at swan.com. And finally, mempool.space. Mempool.space is the leading Bitcoin and blockchain visualizer. I use it all the time to see what's going on in the mempool. I like to see what are the fees that I would need to send a transaction at if I wanted to get into the next block. And over at mempool.space, the team are continually innovating. They're always adding new ways that you can visualize things and understand what's going on, whether that's the mempool goggles, whether that is the different tabs that you can look at, for example, the mining tab, the lightning tab. They even have a liquid explorer also. And don't forget, you can search Bitcoin transactions, whether that, you know, such as historical transactions, or of course, you can see what's in the mempool or in mempools currently. So to find out more, go to mempool.space and they have an accelerator program which you can sign up for at mempool.space/accelerator. And now back to my chat with John. Yeah, of course. And I mean, in fairness, this is, as you said, this is a 15 hours worth of material designed for a 13-year-old person. That's very different from, you know, the kind of thing where, I mean, there already are university level Bitcoin courses. There's already, you know, serious developer level courses and
right.
Everything. I mean, there's all kinds of free material online, but, you know, it's important to understand the context of what this is, who is it for, and then after that, you know, people can go and learn further. I mean, there are people out there who've spent hundreds of hours or thousands of hours learning about Bitcoin, and probably many, you know, people like listeners of this show probably have spent thousands of hours, right? So
yeah.
For them, it's kind of not that, you know, but it's just sort of important to understand the context there. You've also mentioned, and I know you were running some events related to Mi Primo Bitcoin as well. So do you want to just touch on that as well? What are you hoping to achieve with those events, and what are these events you're running?
Yeah. So we have what we call independent Bitcoin education on conferences, right? Maybe a better way to say that for a Bitcoin audience would be a decentralized conference. So we did the first one in El Salvador in November of last year, 2023. We did the second one, the first international one, in Madeira in Portugal, February 29th of this year. The next one will be in Nashville in July. And what that is it's a pretty small conference. So it's we sell 150 tickets, and it's basically, so with the node network, we have a monthly general assembly, right? So like there's all these channels, communication channels, Telegram groups, whatever, where people could share best practices, talk to each other anytime, but once a month, then we all get together and do it in a bit more of a formal setting. But it's online, right? Which is great. It's great to connect people around the world online, but it's like, huh, would this be better if we could organize something in person where we could get Bitcoin educators from around the world to basically share best practices and speed up the timeline, support each other? So that's kind of the genesis of the idea. And to really go further into Bitcoin, again, Bitcoin is our teacher, so decentralization is one of our focuses. It's kind of a hybrid where we do plan part of the day. So it's a full day event, right? It's like 7-8 hours, right? Morning to evening, lunch break in the middle. It's basically a 1-day conference. And we organize a space where it's traditional format. It's somebody at the front of a room. There's all chairs facing the same direction. It's mostly from the stage to the audience, right? It's like the information flows in one direction. What we also do is at the start of the day, people who haven't been selected for that stage, right? Because people just apply if they're going, if they have something to present, then they could give a very quick, like 1-minute audio introduction, who they are, what they want to talk about. And we have someone, his name is James, who has a lot of experience with this. And he writes it all down on a big piece of paper in front of everyone. And based on, you know, what the topics that come in and like, how they relate to each other, he might combine some, he might say like, okay, that's not really relevant, whatever, but But with the participation of everyone there, then we'll collectively make the agenda for a second and third space. And the second and third space are more like roundtable sort of format, right? So it's like there is one or two or three or four discussion leads that are going to talk about the topic. Say it's the role of Bitcoin education within circular economies. And it will be a couple of people that are involved with different circular economies, right? So they'll lead the discussion, but it will be a discussion rather than a speech. So that's the second and third space are decided day of. And really the big value is the in-between, right? The as the day goes on, right. Then it's usually
people can
connect,
share notes, that kind of thing, compare notes on how they're teaching.
Yeah. And that's why I think 150 is a really good number for that, because it's big enough that there's a lot of diversity there, but it's small enough that it's like, that guy said something really interesting in the morning. Let me try to catch up with him. And like, it's pretty easy to catch up with that person later. Right. So by the end of the day, there's usually like a fourth and a fifth space where it's just like groups of people that are continuing conversations that were a bit more organized that started earlier in the day.
Great. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about your collaboration process with governments and universities. Do you want to just talk a little bit about how that goes and, you know, what are the typical requests that they have of you and what is it like for you to work with them?
Yeah. So a question that is always front of mind for us is how do we best stay independent and impartial, which could be a challenge sometimes, right? Especially with these large entities. So I'll give an example and also just talk about a new thing that we're doing. So we are in the very, very early stages, but it's already been announced publicly, working with the Ministry of Education, as well as not be able to pronounce your last name, but Lena from The Little Hodler. So along with her, ourselves and the Ministry of Education, we are going to work on creating new curriculum for younger audiences for the public school system here, right? So two Bitcoin education courses that will precede the Bitcoin diploma, right? For 7, 8, 9, and 10, 11, 12, and the Bitcoin diploma starts at 13 then. And the way that we went into that was, in order to remain independent and impartial, we decided, or we have never taken any funding from a government here or elsewhere. So what we asked for was we wanted it to be open source, like whatever we work on and create, if it's open source, so that we could share it with other educators around the world. So that was, I think it might be the first curriculum developed by a Ministry of Education that will be open source. I'm not sure about that. I've never heard of it before. But so that's kind of our approach, right? Like, we don't want to get the traditional thing out of it. The traditional thing might be money. What we want to get out of it is experience, and we want to be able to use it freely for other purposes and give it away to other people that will be able to use it. And then in turn, that will hopefully help our own fundraising, right? Like, it's like, oh, that's really cool what they did. Okay, I'm gonna give a few sats here, right? So it's kind of a different model, but it's a way that we think we're better able to stay independent and impartial.
I see, yeah. So I guess you're saying not taking government funding, but individual donations and maybe company donations.
And grants are a new one that doesn't take up a big percent of our income at the moment is grants, but I think going forward that percent will grow. And you know, it makes it easier to apply to grants if we're like, hey, look, this is how we've approached things, rather than, hey, we got a bunch of money to do this working with the government. Could we also get money from you? Like, that's a harder ask.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, great. And I guess, yeah, maybe it sort of comes back to as well, like, localization aspects, right? Like, if governments or, well, actually, that's the other aspect. So we spoke about governments. Have you had universities and schools reach out in terms of collaboration with them on their courses and their material, or is it more like they're coming out to you and just saying, hey, we'd like to use your material?
Both, but more the latter. I think like a lot of what we do is we try to make it easier for people to say yes, right? Like easier for university or government, whatever, to start to teach Bitcoin education, because it's like, hey, we'll get it started. We'll do some of the heavy lifting and just give it to you, basically. So that happens a lot. There's also people that reach out to us that are like, hey, we want to build something. Can you help us build it? Right. So there's a university in Colombia. It's one of the larger universities. I think it's a network. I don't know the exact number, but it's a network of universities in Colombia. I think it's like the public university system there. They already had in mind to build a course, and then they saw what we had and they were like, huh, can you guys work with us to fit this into something, an idea that we already had, right? So it wouldn't be the entire course. It would be a part of it rather than, because this will take a semester, right? So it's more than 15 hours. So it's like, can you guys be in charge of working this into, say, a 50-hour course and put your 15 hours in there? So that's something that we're working on with some universities in Colombia now. And I think a lot of what we do is try to create that first model, right? So that's effectively what we're doing with this university in Colombia. And then, you know, we'll learn some lessons there, and it will be easier the next time. And once that actually starts, then we'll be able to kind of pitch it, right? Like, this is what we did with this university in Colombia. Hey, university in Bolivia, would you like to do something similar? It's much easier once there's an example to point to.
Yeah, and I can imagine the content might really need a rework, right? Because if it's targeted for 13-year-olds, now if we're talking about 20-year-olds at university, they'll need a different thing. But that said, there's also a lot of existing material. I know even some of the work I did for Sailor Academy, some of that is actually being used as well by some different universities and companies also, where they just kind of took that material and used it, and I don't even know they're using it, right? Like, it's just out there. So good on them. But that's cool. So if we had to summarize where things are going for this year, as you said, you're updating the curriculum, and I guess maybe it sounds to me from what you're saying that the focus now is sort of getting it out there to other countries so that other countries can pick up this material, pick up the gauntlet and run with it. Is that the main focus for this year with 2024?
Yeah. So we have, you know, our vision statement is 3 simple steps to change the world. And step one is to make El Salvador an example, basically, is to prove that Bitcoin education could be a tool for empowerment at mass scale. And step two is to make that example easy to spread and replicate around the world. And so we're kind of, you know, there's a lot more work here in El Salvador. I'm not trying to say like, okay, mission accomplished.
We're done here. But, yeah.
But there's a path now, right? Yeah. There's like a path now that we could start to apply some lessons learned, some best practices from El Salvador to everywhere, right? To speed up the timeline for the next El Salvador. I mean, El Salvador is a bit special. I don't know. But the next country, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, the 21st, right? That is a big focus is international. Mi Primer Bitcoin will increasingly become international. We'd like to say El Salvador is the focus. The mission is the world. We've always seen El Salvador as a really high leverage opportunity to do something that will echo, right? And we're kind of in that echo part of things now.
Yeah, interesting. One other area I want to touch on, you mentioned this idea of, you know, education for the masses, right? Now, I guess this is going to be a bit more hairy, because at the same time, like, in terms of, you know, what happens when, you know, not everybody can, you know, go on chain, you know, like, can afford to do that. Like, what's the kind of approach going to be there? Because at the same time, it's like, we want to, you know, as you mentioned, one of the values is to empower and so on. But at the same time, there's going to be a lot of people who simply cannot afford to use, like, you know, self-custodial stuff. So what's going to be the approach around that? Is it just going to be that, you know, you have to use some kind of service provider until you're able to be self-custodial? But is that just going to be more like a, or did you just sort of push that off and say, look, let's cross that bridge when we come to it, you know, because maybe we're not there yet?
Yeah, I mean, we're mostly pushing that off. But to give an example of how we've dealt with it in the past, like a similar thing. So we've been doing the Bitcoin Diploma since 2022. So it's crazy. It's less than 2 years because it was later in the year. And there's already been so many evolutions. So in 2022, the first, what we do at the end is we do a verification of the students. It's their final exam, right? But it's just our own spin on it. And one of the activities that we did in those first classes was the students had to recover a wallet from Seed, like make a wallet, destroy it, recover it from Seed, and send a transaction. But that was on chain. So then the fees went up, and that became, right? Like, it's like
laughable, well, right? Yeah, it's just not feasible.
we can't. I mean, it was just to demonstrate. It wasn't, it's not a real transaction. Like, it doesn't have any real value to it. So we had to modify that, and they still restore the wallet, and it's, but different students are restoring the same wallet, right? So the wallet has a balance, so we know that they've successfully restored it. But rather than everyone restoring their own wallet, now multiple people are restoring one wallet, right? So that's
right, just for testing and demonstration purposes. And I know even I'm reminded now, I know there was a wallet project called Padawan, and the idea is it's like a testnet Bitcoin wallet, and it's there to kind of teach people. So that's maybe like another example that, you know, this, and you're, I mean, this is right, this is the way it's going to have to evolve over time, right? Like maybe in the early days, yeah, you can't just do everything on chain because it's cheap and whatever, but as fees rise, then it's going to start to really, those fees are going to start to bite, and we'll have to have other approaches to educate people and to show them, okay, this is how you recover and this is how you use it. So be it, right?
It could be far into
the reality
of
Bitcoin.
Yeah, that, you know, these students never do anything on chain, but I think it's still important that they understand that first layer, right? So it's like, how can we help them understand it, even if they might not ever use it? And maybe like what you, I'm not familiar with that one, but a way to use it without those fees, but a way to understand it. Because one of the things that we've learned is Bitcoin education should be interactive, right? Like people want it to be tangible. That's one of the barriers that a lot of new people have, is like, but I can't hold it in my hands. I can't, it's not real because it's not physical. So it's not real. So as much as possible, we try to let them use it. Right. And then they use it. It's on
the
their phone.
Part,
they send it.
Yeah. It's more,
and they're
realistic.
Like, oh, it makes it real to them. They're like, oh, I can't see it. I actually am holding it in my hand because it's on my phone and my phone's in my hand. So that's important, right? to always use, but there might have to be things like on testnet basically for on chain. And then whether it's Lightning or other layer twos that come in the future, that might be something that they actually use. And we teach them the theory about layer one, but they only use it on testnet, something like that.
Yeah, that may just be the way it goes, because you just have to keep updating based on what's practical and what's pragmatic. And I think that's something that a lot of education over time has, it falls out of date. And so that's the other important part of actually keeping the material up to date, as you are doing, as you mentioned. So that's an interesting focus. I think those are some of the key questions I kind of had. If there's any, I guess, closing thoughts for listeners, and you know, if you want to call out for help, if there's anything that you would like listeners to know, what would you like listeners to take away?
Yeah, I think the takeaway is something that we try to do is again always focus on empowerment, and part of that is to make it easier for people to get started, but also somebody that wants to to educate about Bitcoin. They don't need us. They don't need anyone else. They could do it on their own. Like, one of the messages that we want to send people is, like, we are capable, right? We're all capable of being more than what we're often told in this world, right? Like, I think that's one of the shifts from fiat to Bitcoin, is that we are in control of our own lives, and that changes everything. That the second and third order effects of that means that we're incentivized to plan, to build, to create, and we don't need permission to get started. So take control of your own life, take control of your own future. We think that Bitcoin education is a great tool to do that, and we want to, as much as possible, help people get started on that journey. And then we always need help, right? This is a big mission. We want to change the world with Bitcoin education, and we can't do it alone. That's a huge mission. So the way that people could get involved is, I mean, the simplest thing is they could just donate sats. So we have on our webpage, which is meprimerbitcoin.io or myfirstbitcoin.io, they could donate it directly there. We also have a campaign on Geyser Fund, which is a great way to support Bitcoin projects. So find us on there and donate. Another way is, we're always looking for expertise, right? If you could translate into your local language, if you're really great at marketing, if you're really great at technical aspects, and you could make our GitHub better, if you're whatever you're great at, if you could contribute that skill. So we need your sats, we need your time, we need your energy. But you don't need us, right? Like, if you want the world to be better, then make it so.
Well, that's great. So yeah, listeners, make sure you check it out. I'll put the links in the show notes. It's meprimerbitcoin.io. John, great work with what you're doing out there, and best of luck with it. I'll see you soon. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Lastly, if you enjoyed the show, make sure you thumbs up and give it a review, share it out there with family and friends, and I'll see you in the Citadels.